Welcome to the Radical Lifestyle Podcast, brought to you by Generation to Generation, where you will be inspired by the past, equipped for the present, and prepared for the future as we engage in conversations with people from around the world. Hello everyone, this is Andrew and Daphne from Generation to Generation, and our guest today is Chip Kendall. Chip, for people that don't know who you are, can you just say a bit about where you're from and what you do? I know just saying that could take a while, but...
Hey, Andrew and Daphne, it's great to be with you guys today. I was born in Florida, the land of Mickey Mouse. When I was 12 years old, we moved to the land of Israel, the land of Jesus, to Jerusalem. And then when I was 19, I went across to California. That's where I met my wife, who is from England. We've lived in England now for 21 years. So yeah, that's me. I'm a singer. I am a songwriter. What else? I'm a presenter on media platforms and stuff as well. But most recently, I am the director of a brand new national charity called Soul Children UK, setting up youth gospel choirs all over the nation. So I'm excited about that.
But listen, you're going to be in trouble, Chip. Big trouble. You have not mentioned your husband and a father.
My husband? That's because I don't have a husband. I have a wife.
You are a husband, I said.
Oh, I thought you said I didn't mention my husband.
No, I said you haven't.
I'm glad I didn't mention that.
Well, no. This podcast episode is really taking a turn.
No, I did mention my wife when I said I met my wife in California. Yeah. She's amazing. Now I am going to talk for the whole time about her, but you know, she really is incredible. We have three kids as well, I should say as well. Cole Kendall, his middle name is Israel. So in Hebrew, his name is Kol Israel, meaning all Israel or the voice of Israel. And then we've got Eden, my daughter. She's 10 years old and she's incredible. She's just been coming out with the most incredible questions and things recently. And Elliot, my youngest, is 8. And this kid, honestly, he upstages me across everything. Doing this podcast is my one opportunity to not have Elliot just take over. We did these... family lockdown rap videos when the lockdown first started, and people had more comments about him than they did me. And I was like, right, this is the end of Chip Kendall right now. Elliot's amazing. I love all my kids.
It could be the start of Chip Kendall, actually.
Hey, I like that, Daphne. You're giving me hope.
Well, you're not done yet.
When the next generation rise up, you have a choice to sit back or run with them.
Yes. Brilliant.
Before we go too far in, for people listening, they want to find out more about you, maybe listen to your music, maybe see some of these videos you're talking about, where can they do that?
Yeah, YouTube, we've got Chip Kendall set up there. Orbitron website, which is, Orbitron is a whole other thing, but on the Orbitron channel on YouTube is where you get access to a lot of the stuff we've done in terms of kids' music. Soul Children has got a website now as well, which is just a holding page, but it's a really good start. And that is soulchildrenuk.com.
Okay, and I'll put those links in the description box. So if you're listening, they're there ready for you to go and check out.
He's on it. Andrew isn't just a pretty face, people.
A pretty beard.
He's got a pretty husband as well.
Oh, dear me.
All right. Okay, Chip. Let's go back. How far back do you want to go on? You've told us you lived in all these different places. Take us back to your family. How did you grow up? Talk to us about the family you grew up in.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, a lot of people do ask about that because that was a big step of faith. When we left Florida, my dad was the worship pastor at a really large church. We were well off. We had everything going for us. But the Lord very clearly called us to put all of that aside and to take that leap of faith. And I'm so thankful for both of my parents, you know, who took that leap of faith. And really, Dad came to us. He sat us down. At the time I was 12, my sister was 10. And my dad said, you know, if either of you guys have a check in your spirit about going, you know, I'm not going to be the dad that moves his family to the Middle East only for a couple of years later for you guys to rebel and go off the rails. And he says, you've got to get a word from God yourselves on us going. Otherwise, we're not going. And we were really convinced that he was serious, that we held the power in our hands to say to him, no, I don't want to go. And we wouldn't go. But in our own little way, both my sister and myself really got a word from God. And so when we moved by faith to Jerusalem, Israel, when I was 12, sister was 10, that was a genuine family going, we are going by faith. And there was no promise of a salary for Dad. I mean, that was a big thing for him financially. We had to raise our own support. And it wasn't even like that was hard work. It was like we just let slip that we were going out there. People would ask, how can we support you? How can we give to you? And that really launched our family ministry. You know, for a good 7 years while we were based there in Jerusalem, we traveled the world. We created albums together. We sang together. We encouraged people. We preached. You know, we were preaching all over the place. And that, to me, that wasn't a big thing to be a young person in ministry, because it was my life. It was what I did. I saw God clearly working through me. I remember one moment, maybe this is for somebody listening, but I think I was about 16 years old. Dad was leading worship at the front. We were in Texas, and I felt a weight on my shoulders, and I thought it was my mom. I thought mom had just come up behind me and put her hands on my shoulders. That would be natural. That would make sense. But when I turned around and looked back, she wasn't there. And this was a tangible, physical, I felt something on my shoulders. And I only had to look up to God and pray, what is this? And I just sensed him saying to me, I'm putting my mantle of ministry on your shoulders. And he said, if you thought you were going to have a normal 9-to-5 day job coming, you know, you got another thing coming, because really, I have set you apart for ministry. This, I want you to know, this isn't even just your parents telling you to do this. This is me putting this mantle on your shoulders. And since I was 16 at the time, and since then, I've never had a doubt in my mind. Any moment where God's asked me to do something or step out in faith, or, you know, it's never been, oh, Chip needs a lot of convincing for that. No, no, no. I know that he has ruined me for the ordinary. He's marked me out. He's put his mantle of ministry on me. And for me to do anything else is just living in disobedience. Mm-hmm. So that was really important for me growing up. And anyway, I could tell lots of stories.
Yeah. I mean, people often might say, yeah, we're a family in ministry, a family on mission. But more often than not, it's really the parents doing it. The kids are kind of tagging along.
Yes.
And so this is a great example of you actually being involved. Was this... did they include you in this because this was really a life-changing situation here? Or is this something, a pattern that they had of including you in ministry things, asking you for your opinions, etc.?
Yeah, we joke at the time because my dad saying, hey, if you guys have any check at all in your spirit, it's because Dad didn't want to go as much as my mom wanted to go. and he was looking for any scapegoat, any way out, anything, you know, looking around the room, anyone. And, you know, we joke about that. But really, I think what it comes down to is God was doing a deep work in us. Dad will tell you, if this is Dad's interview, which you're really welcome to talk to him too, he would say that at the time, he was going through a serious life crisis where he realized that he was doing ministry so much as the worship pastor of this big church that he didn't even know us. He didn't really know who his kids were. We didn't have a family relationship at that point. And when we moved to Jerusalem, because we didn't have lots of money and we had a lot, you know, all that, we didn't have a TV. I think we had a black and white TV that had like 5 channels on it or whatever, but you know, it's all in Hebrew anyway. But you know, we didn't have that to distract us. My mom didn't know how to cook the food there. Definitely didn't have any friends. We just didn't know anybody. It was such a quick moment from transition from God calling us to go. I think 3 months later, we were there, 2 suitcases each. We said goodbye to everything else. We took our dog with us. You know, and it was such a leap of faith. It was so much more than just a step of faith. There was like, we took the leap of faith and the steps caught us up. We started to get to know each other. Dad started to really have this deep work of healing. Sometimes he'd disappear and we wouldn't see him for a while. And he'd come out, and he'd written a song, you know, and God really had like drawn him out of that place. And all of us were part of that journey of then getting to know each other. I remember writing my first song. I was at the keyboard and it was so simple. I was 12. It was when we just moved out there. And I was so bored. I sat down at this keyboard and banged out this dumb little song. And I just prayed a prayer right then. I said, God, if this is a gift from you, which I believe it is, I promise that I will use it to glorify you. And so, you know, that transition that took place from being so distracted and not it's not like it was extracurricular stuff we were distracted with. Any Christian family would look at our family as like a model family of, you know, what it means to be plugged into church and active in all the ministries and doing all that stuff. But this was a deep work that God did in us by moving us out there to then strip away all of that to where you get to redefine, re-explore, rediscover what God has put in there to begin with. And in all honesty, when lockdown happened, right, my son was 12 years old at the time. My daughter was 9, but almost 10. And obviously younger son as well. I could not help but feel, as we're a family locked down at home together, I've experienced this before. When did I last experience this? Oh, I know, when I was 12, when I lived in Israel. And you know, I as horrible and as terrible and as tragic as it was and all the work that I lost during lockdown, I was so thankful for this chance to hit rock bottom with my family and be able to tell stories of my own. We created this thing called Family Go Time, where we wouldn't do anything. And, you know, even the kids were homeschooling. We still had a lot of jobs and a big agenda and all the things we had to get through in the day. But we would start every day with something called Family Go, which is where we would come around. We'd usually start by watching like a Superbook video, right? Where it's like some kind of Bible lesson. And then we would pray together as a family and we'd all put our hands in the middle. All right, family, go, right? So now we're like Team Kendall and we're ready to face our day and do whatever we want. That would not have happened, 100% that would not have happened had it not been for lockdown, just to force us to get to know each other once again, to really listen to each other, to, you know, go through all the frustration and all of that stuff that comes to the surface and our marriage and everything. It all happened. And it needed that little moment where we stepped out of the one thing and stepped into something new. And that's what lockdown created for us. So that's probably my only good story from lockdown.
So it's interesting. So really, you being involved with that decision to move to Israel was really a catalyst as well in seeing you guys engaging more in an intergenerational family orientated ministry going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and that doesn't happen with a one-off decision. That's over time, and that's over still maintaining relationship with my parents and Helen with her parents as well. You know, it you're right. You're absolutely right. That planted a seed, didn't it, that is now bearing fruit.
I mean, a practical question here that I'm just curious about. You said we moved to Jerusalem. These days, you can't just move to Jerusalem. I mean, never mind COVID. I mean, there's a lot of restrictions on just moving to Jerusalem. Was it very different then?
It was and it wasn't. I mean, there's a lot of bureaucracy when it comes to Israel. You know, we did not call ourselves missionaries.
No.
If we did that, they would have kicked us out right away. We're not Jewish. So we weren't eligible to make Aliyah, which is, you know, Hebrew for immigration, but really almost like a spiritual thing. We were invited to move there by the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem, which is kind of a made-up thing. It's not like a Canadian embassy or an American embassy. It's a Christian embassy. What's that? What diplomatic relations have you got with anything? Hmm. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff against us at the time, but for us, the biggest struggle was the culture shock. The struggle was real, man. I mean, you know, we went to Ulpan, which is like Hebrew school. And I was used to an American setup for school. And then when we moved to Israel, we decided to homeschool. We used a curriculum called Accelerated Christian Education. And so I was just kind of getting used to homeschooling. Then I get chucked into this Ulpan thing, which isn't really school. I'm not learning science and math and all that. I'm just learning the language. Mm. But it was the closest thing I had to quote unquote high school. Because, you know, when I moved out there at 12, I just finished middle school. And so this is like high school, and I did not get it. I mean, I just didn't connect with anybody. And it was a huge culture shock for me personally. I know my sister, even though we had all that stuff with, you know, we're not going unless you feel God called. Okay. Yeah. God's called you. From the moment we moved out there, my sister was saving up for a ticket to fly home to America. I mean, it was just horrible. It was a difficult transition, you know. One of the things that I've heard quite recently, again, this kind of comes back to the choirs thing, is that when your voice is changing, one of two things can happen. I guess this happens for the guys, so I'm talking more to Andrew.
Yeah, but, I gathered that.
Sorry, Davide. But when your voice changes, inevitably one of two things happens. One, you give up singing. Boys who maybe had a good voice before, they don't actually carry on singing. In fact, they will tell you, I'm not a singer. They'll be like the first ones in line to say, I am not a singer. I'm not signing up to anything that involves singing. But this is like science, right? Those boys that continue to sing through the transition, they just persevere with it. They slog it out. They just keep it up. Okay, it's difficult. It's awkward. Your voice changes. You got to find a new register. Those are the ones who actually end up being the best male singers. Wow. The ones who continue to sing through the transition, even though it's really difficult. And apparently you can actually pick it up again. If you say you said to everybody, you know, I don't like to sing because you struggled through that transition, you can still pick it up again and be one of the best singers if you will persevere and go through all of that. And I just find that such a great picture, a model of any transition, any time that God calls us out of one place and puts us into another. Yes, it's going to be difficult, but if we will persevere with him, then we're going to find that we're so far better set up for what he's got next for us. So, you know, that would be another encouragement to persevere through the transition.
Yep, sing through the transitions. I was going to say, as you were saying that, I was going to say there's a preach in this.
Yay, come on. It's a good one.
Well, so there you are out in Jerusalem. How long were you there for?
Yeah, I was there for 7 years. My parents are still there. They've got their house in Jerusalem. Yeah, I was there for 7 years. So I left when I was 19.
We've been to their house.
Hey, the house of worship.
It was a while ago.
We did go.
It's interesting. Maybe you could share a bit more about this. I mean, you've been to Israel a few times since, but for people that haven't been, especially for Christians, you know, we think about the Holy Land, you know, and this sort of, you know, this place where it's all magical, and you know, we want to go, but then you talk about this culture shock, and you know, things were really difficult, and can you just share some of the other things that you find difficult, maybe even now, certain things about Israel that, you know, you find challenging.
Okay, so people talk about the Dutch being really blunt, right? Or they talk about the French being really blunt. You have not met a blunt person until you've moved to Israel.
Yeah.
I mean, like genuinely, right? They... especially as an American living out there. And, you know, we're taught growing up, you can be anything, you know, really aspirational, optimistic, positive. You can be the president of the United States if you want to be. You know, you just got to stick at it. And then you go to Israel. My dad used to joke, you know, in America, when it comes to customer service, the customer is always right. In Israel, the customer is always stupid. That is that's the starting place, right? You just go into this place. All you want is you want to buy some milk. And they look at you and they're like, what are you doing here? You're like, whoa, is this actually a shop that I've stepped into? Or have I walked into your house? Like, I'm really sorry. I'm looking for some milk. And one time, my mom asked the lady in the grocery store, she said, I need bleach. And there was a little bit to begin with. She was trying to figure out what she meant. And she's like, no, I need bleach. I want to wash my clothes. I want them to be white. And finally, the lady like looks at her and she's like, yeah, we don't sell any of that here. And so my mom persevered and she said, well, how do you make your clothes white? How do you keep your clothes white? And the lady looked at my mom. And I'm not even joking. She actually said to her, she goes, we just don't wear white.
That is brilliant.
I know. It's too funny. Honestly, you cannot write this stuff. But at the same time, if you look at it, right, just like an overview, Israel has the most startup businesses
of
any nation on earth. Israel is militarily like got the best secrets. They have guns in Israel that can shoot around corners.
Wow.
Can you believe that? They're inventing new, like Iron Dome. A lot of people know about Iron Dome. It's this thing of like protection, right? It's self-defense and stuff. And all other nations are like copying them and they're having to catch up to what Israel's done. So, you know, as much as I can have a go at the culture of being really blunt and being like that, you cannot argue the fact that God has gifted these people with something really special. And if you have eyes to see it, if you have a heart that is really willing to persevere and go with it, you will find gold that you did not know was even possible. There's a reason why Israel is called the apple of God's eye. You know, and my dad talks about the fact that the apple of the eye is the pupil and the focus. And you think, even though you've got lots of things in your peripheral, really, what are you focusing on? I believe that God, and this is God, the God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Jesus, he loves his people. He's focused on them. And so I don't want to say anything bad about them. You know, I know I've just been having a bit of fun and a bit of a giggle, but ultimately, these are God's precious people. And if we will join with God in rescuing these lost souls, just like anywhere else on the planet, I believe we're doing some of the greatest work on the planet right now.
Yeah. And I asked about the challenges because I know that we've had people come on our Israel trips in the past and gone, well, I found this really challenging. This is not at all what I had in mind, because they had this magical place in their mind. And suddenly they get there and they find out, wait, these people are people. And with people come challenges. And so I was like, well, let's hear from Chip. And then people listening that are going to Israel, they'll be more prepared for what they're going to.
Yeah, well, and they'll have to remember not to wear white.
Yeah, and don't wear white.
Oh, no, they're better now. They've got that fixed. That way you're talking like 30
But I don't hear it like that you're criticizing or anything. You're teasing like you tease family.
And, you know, like they say, you tease the ones you love the most. So
yeah, I love that. And, you know, I learned that when I moved to England, because that was, again, something that I just had to learn. That was a culture shock, again, coming to England and watching the TV show The Weakest Link, right? Uh-huh. So The Weakest Link starred a woman named Anne Robinson.
You were on that, weren't you, at one point?
And I had to go on the show to thank Anne Robinson. Because when I first moved to England, I learned about this concept of taking the mick, right? Taking the mick. And what you guys would call teasing. And I hated it. I thought, this is the worst thing ever. It's sarcasm. It's seeing the worst in people. It's, you know, just hate speech. And then I started to watch Anne Robinson. And I was like, oh, when she takes the mick out of somebody, it's like her secret way of saying, I love you.
Yeah. Yeah. My granddad was just like that. My mum's dad. We would have guests from America and different countries all the time. And he would just launch straight into making fun of them, just teasing them.
Yeah.
And afterwards, they'd be like, I don't think he likes me. And we would say, no, wait, we need to explain something. In England, we say that you tease the ones you love the most. So the fact that he's making fun of you and teasing you shows that he's comfortable enough that he likes you to be able to do that kind of thing. Yeah, so if anyone comes to England, that happens to you, don't take it personally. Don't be offended. It means they probably like you. So.
Before we leave Jerusalem, do you remember where you first met me?
We weren't in Jerusalem.
No?
Wasn't it the One Thing conference? What? Oh, Soul Survivor?
Yeah. No. Yeah, it was.
Nope. You two don't know what I know. I'll give you one more guess, Chip, then I'll tell you.
You met him before I met him.
Jim Yost, right?
No.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I've got both of you. If you're watching, I mean, if you're not watching, if you're listening, I've got both of them looking at me like you're crazy. I'm going to remind you where you first met me. We were at Soul Survivor or somewhere, and you looked at me and said, I had a dream about you. You were in Jerusalem. You are the woman of my dreams. Do you not remember that?
No, I do remember that because I remember the dream really clearly as well.
So you first met me in Jerusalem.
In his dreams.
In my dreams.
I didn't specify where.
Where did he first meet me?
So I just wanted to throw that in. And the look on both your faces was well worth me throwing that in.
So yes, Daphne's the woman of my dreams. Shall I tell the story of that dream or is that not the right time?
Yeah, anything's the right time. We're just chatting now.
Anything goes in this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like such a God thing, right? I had a dream that I was in back in Israel. These kids come up to me and they're on bikes. They're on bicycles and they've got these T-shirts on. In Hebrew, it says, who do you love? Who do you love in Hebrew? And that's all it said. And they're looking at me and they're like on some kind of like campaign, you know, and these guys are like all riding together and they look over at me and they're like, ah, you like Halloween. That's what they said to me. And I thought, why do they think I like Halloween? And then I realized, oh, I had a mohawk. I had a Mohican at the time. I had crazy hair. So like, oh, they're judging me on my hair. Okay, that's fine. Anyway, they rolled out. Then I'm on Ben Yehuda Street. There's this shop where the theme is Betty Boop. I mean, there is this like Betty Boop theme going on in the shop, and out of the shop comes this woman, and it was Daphne. She came running out of the shop like really, really fast, and I think there was a bucket involved. There was some kind of a bucket with water or something. Anyway, then she went running off, and then the rest of the dream played out. And then like the next day, I'm at Soul Survivor. I look at Daphne and I'm like, it was you. You were the person in my dream. That's weird. Like I was like, there's something really significant here. Like, do I have to follow you? Do I need to go to Jerusalem? What's going on? And I've still been trying to figure out what that is ever since then. It's mental.
Well, I had to just throw that in before we left Jerusalem. So, well, I mean, we could hang in the whole time in Jerusalem. That could become the whole essence of the podcast.
True.
Maybe another time.
Yes.
We can do that. But let's... okay, so now you're in Jerusalem. You're in Israel. What's the next phase of your life?
Yes. So had a real clear call from God to go to this school in California. It was in Pasadena, to be more precise. And it was, we tell people it was an art school by day, Bible school by night, and we just never slept. We felt like that for 2 years, Helen and I. And we met on the same course because we were attempting to do the 3-year program in 2 years based on the fact that we had previous training. And we were the only two students at the time that were attempting that and just didn't notice each other. We knew each other. We were good friends, but we didn't fancy each other and went for the whole course of the 2 years did our thing. We finished with this tour around the U.S. with this little troupe of artists. And, you know, a light switched on somewhere along the way. And I realized I didn't want to say goodbye to Helen at the end. And I was like, oh, this feels really awkward. Like I'm saying goodbye to one of my best friends. But I knew it was like, no, I want to be more than just friends. But does she feel that way as well? And so there was this whole funny thing that happened. And she did. It turned out she did. But then, you know, she was flying back to England. So we had probably a good, I want to say a good year. It was definitely a year before I proposed to her. It might have been a little bit more than that before we were actually married. But it was a long time. And so, you know, for us to make that across the pond thing happen, we knew that there was going to be some sort of a give. You know, I tell people we had an arm wrestling match and she won, and that's why I'm living in England. But that isn't true. What actually happened was, I knew the Lord had called me to the nations, and England is another nation. I'll go to England. And our mentor at the time, he sat me down and he said, you know, this is a really big deal for you to move to England. And he was probably looking ahead to all the taking the mix stuff that was going to be coming. But I didn't know it at the time. I just knew that he really cared about me and he wanted me to make this decision. This isn't just me, you know, being swayed by my fiance. This is me making a decision to go. And then when I did move over here, that was another story, because we auditioned for the tribe, the Worldwide Message Tribe.
Yeah.
And I remember Andy Hawthorne sitting me down and he said, he goes, are you an evangelist? And I said, no, I'm probably more of a prophet, really. Whenever I do those fivefold ministry tests, I always come out as a prophet. And he's like, oh. And then he goes, are you called to Manchester? And I was like, well, I'm called to the nations. I'm not really called to Manchester. He's like, oh, right. Anyway, at the time, I didn't think I was answering wrong on all of his questions about, you know, the job, this is the job interview. I just had to give the honest answer. And, you know, I'm so glad that I did. I really am. Andy Hawthorne is one of my best friends and one of my best mentors, I should say. Even now, I'm in his advanced group. And at the time, for me to answer along those lines, I always knew that no matter what would come next, that God had me. He knew I was on assignment and I was here as his missionary. I was here, you know, doing what he called me to do by faith. And anyway, long story short is that they wanted to give me the job, but the tribe was finishing at the time. And so they said, oh, we're going to tell you about our friends who are starting this thing called the Bay of No Name. And that's what I was in for a number of years. But, you know, for me to be able to look back at that is really important. Even now with Andy, he still jokes, you know, he's going to kick me out of the advanced group because I'm not an evangelist. But he sees that there's a call of God to be an evangelist all my life. And so he's got this like tug of war thing going on. And I'm just so thankful for that. I'm thankful that I'm able to see and be seen. And I think that's really important for any minister of the gospel, that we are able to do both. And we've got the right people around us who are championing us on. Because, man, it's tough. It's hard. The trustees that I've pulled together for the Soul Children UK, that's what gives me hope that this is going to work. This thing's going to fly. It's going to be amazing. It's not down to me. It's down to this group of individuals who know that God has put it on their hearts to do it. So I'm excited.
So let's hear about this initiative.
Okay.
We know nothing, so build it from the grassroots up.
Oh, well, yeah, I would love to chat about it because, so where does the story start? I think it goes back to, I was invited to go on tour in Norway. And the people who were inviting me were the ones who ran this really incredible festival in Norway. It's called Seaside Festival, the best festival this side of heaven. That's their strapline. And it is. I mean, they take over this island and you get to jump off the cliffs and they've got this huge bridge that connects the island to the mainland. And there's lots of teaching things happening throughout the day. It's a youth festival. But then the music stuff and the production, they just don't hold back. It's really, really fun. And Norwegians are brilliant. If you want to talk about cultures, they have the culture of adventure. And it's like, you just know that you're onto something great with Norwegians. So, you know, they invited me to do this tour of Norway that was going to go from, basically all around Norway. We had to fly at one point from one part of Norway to another part of Norway. I didn't realize how long and skinny the whole country was. Mm. But like when we flew north, that was like right on the same latitude lines as parts of Alaska. You're really close to the Northern Lights and the Arctic Circle and all that. So I couldn't say no to this. And even though it wasn't my full band, it was just me and a keys player, I thought this is worthwhile doing this. And so I went on this tour. I think it was 18 dates in 21 days. It was a long time to be away from my family, but I knew that God called me to do it. And it was a lot of concerts and I had to keep my voice and all that. But somewhere at the beginning, somebody shows me this video of Soul Children. Now, Soul Children started back in 2001. It was ages ago, but they're growing and growing. And at the time, they showed me a video of 1,000 kids on stage, teenagers. I say kids because I'm old, but 1,000 teenagers on stage, teens and preteens. They're like tweens. That's what I should say. 1,000 tweens on stage. And I'm looking at this video thinking, this is mental. And then they're all singing in Norwegian, but then they're like, no, this is gospel music. This is actually Christian music that they're singing. And I was like, I have never seen anything like this before in my life. I've seen hundreds of kids, but not 1,000 kids on a stage, anyway, I could go on and on about that video forever because that's what sold me. And the guy could see my enthusiasm. He was the sound technician on the tour. And he leans over my shoulder and he's like, oh, that's Randil. That's my mom's best friend. She leads the whole movement. And I was like, what? And then he's like, do you want to meet her? And I'm like, I'm going from like watching this video to being like, yeah, go on, man. That's amazing. And it was at the end of that 3-week tour that I finally got to meet her in Oslo. So she got the full force of my enthusiasm. Tell me about this choir. This is amazing. She's like, oh, that's an old video. Our choir is 2,500 kids now. And I'm like, what? It's the International Soul Children Festival. She goes, you should come. You should come and bring your band. And you can see the choir. You can perform for the choir. And never before have I ever been so excited about preaching to the choir. I was like, man, this is a good gig for us. 2,500 kids. We're going to do this. So we go, bring my whole band with me. Like, we fully nailed it. It was just a really great time. One of the best gigs of my life. Then they said to me, your band can go home, but can you stay for the rest of the weekend? We want to show you what we do. And I was like, yeah, of course. So that event was in this huge stadium called Spectrum Arena. They then spent the next day doing a march, like a parade from the stadium right to the middle of Oslo, outdoor concert, and they're singing my songs. Wow. You know, this is like one of the things. I thought that I was coming to sing to them, but I didn't realize it was the practice because they were now going to perform my songs with me as we went on this parade. Did this thing, like 11,000 people rock up. It's like their version of Trafford Square or somewhere like that, you know, Times Square if you're in New York. It was like the proper spot to be in Oslo. And then they invited all those people and the parents and the teachers and everybody along to the event on the Sunday. They did a church service back in the arena. And it was like, oh, let's do Soul Children church service, Soul Church. And it was incredible. It blew me away the whole weekend. And I said to her afterwards, because I was like, thank you very much for letting me stay for this and performing with the kids. But I said, why don't you have anything like this in England? Because I knew that they did a lot of international work. And she says, well, you know, we started that whole conversation. Anyway, I won't go into that whole part of the story. But what it came down to is that they were just waiting for the right person to come along. And as I began to pray about this, I was like, man, Lord, I can see this happening. In fact, I can see everything that I do ministry-wise coming under this umbrella, because this is really all about introducing young people to a lifelong friendship with Jesus through music and songs they can relate to. That's me. That's why you put me on the planet, and my songs that I write, I would love to see this happening in the UK. And we prayed about it, and it, you know, went through the whole thing. And it was really only during lockdown. This is what I started to tell you before we pressed record, because even though a lot of this was already in motion beforehand, even chatting to Scripture Union about coming on board as well, during lockdown, the guys at Scripture Union, they're the ones that put it to me. And they said, you know, we've got a lot of other things we're focusing on right now. The best thing that you can do is actually launch this as its own charity, and we'll come alongside you as national partners. But for you to get a board around you, trustees, and launch out with it, we're going to cheer you on the whole way. And the day before my birthday last year, so December 17th, we finally heard back from the Charities Commission. Soul Children UK has got its own charity number. We've got the status. We're setting up the bank account right now. It's all actually been sown and planted, and it's launching right off the back of a pandemic, which is, it's crazy when you consider the fact that one of the points of the pandemic is you weren't allowed to sing together. Do you remember that? That was like one of the things that they were going on and on about. And anyway, so we're just excited about all these young people. There's a lot on the horizon right now. We're launching like 10 of these choirs just around here in Manchester as part of something called Festival Manchester. And God is just basically smiling over the whole thing. And we're seeing so much favor. Not to say that it's not hard work. It's still a lot of hard work. But it's the right trustees. It's the right teachers. It's the right choir leaders. It's the right songs that are being birthed right now as well. And I guarantee you, we are seeing a generation to generation shift happen where kids are getting it. They're understanding why they're singing. They're understanding the purpose of music in the first place. There's that verse in Psalms 8, I think it is, where it says, I don't want to get this wrong. It says, you have birthed music in the mouths of babes.
Out of the mouths of babes and infants, of ordained babes, to silence the foe and
silence
the
foe and the avenger. Yes, Daphne's coming to my rescue. Yes. Well, if you look at the very beginning of that chapter, just in the notes where it says a psalm of David, that sort of thing, it says it was played on the gittith. And then the second footnote is the gittith is the instrument of Gath. Who else came from Gath?
Goliath,
right? So you guys have probably taught on this for years and years, but for me, it was a big revelation that David wrote a song on the instrument of the place where he defeated the giant from, which is all about using praise to defeat the foe and the avenger. I mean, look, do you see the beauty of what was happening in that moment right there? Mm. And that's what we're doing with these young people. We're equipping them with the gift of music in order to go to war. I mean, it's a big deal, you know. So I'm excited about these choirs.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I hear.
Are you signing up? You're still just about in the age bracket. So.
Excuse me, I will be going. Invite or not, I shall be arriving at something.
You're going to crash the party.
No, any minute now, Chip's going to say, "Come on up, Daphne. We'd love to have you at one of these things." Aren't you, Chip?
Any minute now. It's just
you know, people quote that verse, out of the mouths of babes and infants have ordained praise, which, yeah, but the power of to silence the foe and the avenger is left off.
Yeah.
And I think even on another level, you know, there's problems around, so the adults meet to pray. Not a child in sight, no one in sight. I'm like, well, who was ordained to silence the foe and the avenger?
Yes.
It's them. I don't mean that we thrust them out, but the second half of that verse is the most powerful. And when did Jesus quote it?
Oh, yes, he did, didn't he?
When? Do you remember?
Tell me.
But I'll tell you. So here he goes into the temple and he goes towards the temple and everybody's shouting, "Hallelujah, hallelujah, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord," and everything's wonderful. And then Jesus walks into the temple and bang, over goes a table. He's crushing over these tables, throwing them on their side. And what is happening? I it doesn't say this, but it appears like all the adults shut up and maybe left and go like, we're not going to be a part of this. The children, what did they keep doing? Hallelujah, hallelujah, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And what did the Pharisees and Sadducees say? In colloquial terms, Jesus, tell those children to shut up. And what did Jesus say? Out of the mouths of babes and infants, I have ordained praise to silence the foe and the avenger.
He that said, was... you want to shut them up, but they're going to shut you up.
So, you know, that this on multiple levels, that moment, they carried on when Jesus was being radical and he was being violent. I mean, I use that in the tables were going. He was not going to have his father's house desecrated. And when the adults shut up and were afraid of what was going on, nobody told the children to be quiet, and so they kept on. Hallelujah, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So I think, you know, those verses are powerful in the way, to me, that Jesus picked them up and mobilized them.
Oh, I love it, Daphne. Love it, love it, love it. Couldn't agree more. And it's the case now, isn't it? The power of a song, right? A song can get stuck in your head. And people hate those little kiddie songs. You know, baby shark, do 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 do.
Oh,
baby,
no. I'm going to have that stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
exactly.
I know one. If I were a butterfly.
Hey, that's Salty. You remember Salty the Singing Songbook? Yeah, he's a legend. Ernie Retina.
But to tell you another aspect of the power of these songs, is when you are in your old age, what do you remember?
Exactly.
The songs of your childhood. Who wants all these older people singing?
If I were a butterfly
and all the rest of it. So you're investing not only in who they are today, but you're investing in who they're going to be. Anyway, I took over from you, so do carry on.
Oh, no, Daphne, I love it. And you're absolutely right. And the great thing is that, and this is what I've learned over time, kids' songs don't have to be rubbish. They can be really good. They can still be repetitive. They can still be fun. But, you know, we've done like gangster rap kid songs. We've done like hardcore rock. We did John 3:16 as a hardcore rock song, and it's amazing. And kids love it, and they're jumping up and down, and they're dancing, and they're singing, they're celebrating not just the message, but also the actual method or the medium or the media of it. And if you can do that, if you can have a win-win situation, then what you're doing is you're not just winning the kids, you're winning the parents over as well. You're winning everybody who has that song playing over and over in their head, because ultimately they're thinking in line with the Bible and with the Bible values. And you can start to see how it's quite sneaky, but actually God has given us the gift of music for that.
I actually hate the phrase children's songs or kids' songs.
Yeah.
Because they're not. If a song is worthy, it's a Jesus song.
Yes.
It's worshiping him, it's praising him. And I think when we have the mentality, oh, this is a kid's song, we almost end up focusing on the children or on the young people instead of focusing on Jesus. I have a bit of a principle that if I cannot sing it when there's no children there, if I can't sing it with the adults and they can't worship Jesus, I'm not that interested.
Yeah.
Because the test is, is it worshiping Jesus, praising him, whatever, then we should all be able to take it. But if it doesn't, I believe it doesn't have the God focus. It has the focus of children or the focus of teenagers. So my primary test for anything is, can you remove the children and young people and that song still be worthy?
Yeah, I agree. And it is really annoying as somebody who writes these songs to be labeled. A lot of times they talk about all age worship. And you're like, yeah, all age worship is just code for kids music.
Yeah.
But I can see that they're attempting to do that, aren't they? They're trying to be all inclusive and all that. But at its core, I do like the title all age worship, because all worship should be all age worship.
Exactly. I mean, there isn't in the Bible any differentiation. I mean, it was for all ages. And everything was for all ages, if we're going to go down that route. I mean, yeah. it was multi-generational from start to finish, but we won't go too far down.
I was about to say, this could be a very deep rabbit hole we're about to go down.
We're not going down it. But I totally am with you. Well, we are totally with you, Chip. Totally.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Daphne. You know, another thing that God showed me is I kept noticing a lot of people that I know that I'm close to who are quite prophetic were also keen historians. They were people who were really interested in history, that, you know, where the wells of revival were happening and what God did in the past, and even the Bible. Anybody who studies the Bible, studying ancient history, you know. And I asked the Lord, I said, why is it that all these people that are prophetic and constantly speaking about the future and going into everything about the future are so interested in the past? And the thing that the Lord showed me, he goes, because they're people who understand trajectory.
Wow.
That if you can understand how things started, then you have a very clear understanding of where it's going and how it's going to get there. And not only that, where you are on the trajectory is really important. So I've never really shied away from that, especially when it comes to the generational type things. People who are thinking sustainability, people who are thinking longevity, people who are thinking about that stuff in the future, chances are going to be very interested in what's happening with the kids. People who aren't interested in kids, they're just self-consumed. And they can last as long as they want with that. But the ones who are interested in the kids are the ones who really care about where we're going.
Yeah.
Well, biblically, according to the Bible, one generation shall tell the next generation.
Yes.
So we all have a biblical command, a biblical mandate to take the next generation. This isn't an option or a calling. This isn't a Chip Kendall thing.
Yeah.
We should all be Chip Kendalls. I mean,
cheers.
This is, and to throw in one of our standard phrases is, to turn a nation, you must take the next generation.
Come on.
So go, Chip. You are turning this nation.
As we wrap up, for people in England, I guess specifically, if they're interested in this choir thing that you're doing with Soul Children, that they may be interested in seeing if they can get involved somehow, maybe have one in their area. What's that process look like? How could they do that?
Yes, please get in touch with me. I think it's info@soulchildrenuk.com. Or even just email me, chip@chipkendall.com. Kendall has two L's. And, you know, the important thing really is that we start the conversation. Everything starts with a conversation. And for me, especially in these times, I'm believing that ultimately where we're going with this is so big that the enemy he hates it. He's going to do everything he can to shoot it down. And so I would encourage anybody, if something we've said about Soul Children sparks something in you, please do not delay. Don't waste any time. Don't let any distraction come. Just get in touch and let's start the conversation. We have this really great thing. It's the Soul Children UK Guide. And it's, you know, it's fully designed and it looks beautiful. It's amazing. And we're praying about how to print them and how to get them out there, because right now everything happens electronically. I can give you that guide right away. And you can see what it takes to start a choir, what the commitment is, the type of leaders that we're after. You know, the three main pillars are music, spirit, and social. Or you could say music, faith, and fun. And if you're missing one of those pillars, then it's not really Soul Children. So we need to make sure that these choirs, as they start, begin as they intend to go on and to finish. That sounds like a game show host right now. But yeah, but you know, so I would love to get in touch with them even at this early stage.
Well, what you're saying is you're establishing the DNA.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
Yeah. Thanks, Chip. We really appreciate it. We don't get to catch up with you as often as we'd like, but thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chip.
Bless you. Love you loads.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If it inspired you, please rate us and subscribe on Apple or Google Podcasts, Spotify, or another podcast platform.